Blood donations are down in Illinois and across the nation, and that means blood supplies are tight and starting to dwindle. Why should you care? Well, you never know when you might need some of that supply. Don't believe me? Just ask my guests this weekend. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. We are in the midst of an emergency blood shortage. The American Red Cross reports that blood donations are way down last month, and the humanitarian organization is sounding the alarm. Well, we're going to look past the headlines this weekend with two women who are right in the middle of this crisis and helping to point the way through. Joy Squire is Director of Communications for the Illinois Red Cross. She's also a national spokesperson for the American Red Cross. Emily Alanis is District Manager for Donor Recruitment, all important at a time like this. Well, we are conducting this interview via Zoom conferencing, and I thank both of you for joining me. Let's get started with you, Joy. Joy Squire, can you give us an overview of this nationwide crisis?
Well, the Red Cross collects 40% of the nation's blood supply, and that's an important number because last month we were down more than 19,000 units, and that means people just weren't able to come out and donate blood, and you never know when you're going to need that blood. Cancer patients, sickle cell patients, people having surgery, transplants, accident victims, you never know. Really only 3% of the U.S. population donates blood in a given year. And when those people slow down, we need more people to come out and join them, certainly. We experience an emergency blood shortage, which means we may have to slow the supply of blood to hospitals.
Now, that has that had to happen in any parts of the country yet, or are we in fairly, at least keeping up right now, if that's the word to use?
Keeping up is a good word. We did declare an emergency blood shortage because we put some stipulations on type O blood once we saw the 19,000 unit shortfall, but we've been heeding the call and trying to get the message out. So we appreciate you letting your listeners know about this emergency blood crisis.
Now, Emily Alanis, does Chicago seem to be or feel like it's ahead of or behind the curve?
So we have a lot of great things going for us in Chicago, and we are a location, especially being in the Midwest, where people show up, they answer these calls. Unfortunately, we still are outpacing the amount of blood we use in Chicagoland compared to what we're bringing in. And so that's where you see that 19,000. We're not as far behind as some of our other regions, but we definitely have work to do. And unfortunately, one thing we're seeing here in Chicago is the temperatures are going up. And just in July alone, we had 10 drives impacted where we either needed to cancel the drive day of because we couldn't control the temperature in our space, or we had to close early because it became unsafe to donate blood. So we have lots of unique things going on that while we have a strong donor base, we have a great support system, we've had some odd impacts over the last couple of months that are getting us to this place.
And can you explain why temperature would be so, but it's not just a matter of people coming out of their houses. What else does temperature do when you are collecting blood?
Yeah, so temperature is very important because as we are considered a medical environment, we do have to be able to control that temperature. We like to keep our temperature between 68 and 82 degrees. We find that that has the best outcome for individuals feeling good, being excited when they leave. And unfortunately, if it gets above that 82 degree marker, we start to see things like reactions. And if somebody has a bad reaction once, it's very likely we won't have them come in and donate again. So we're very careful to not get ourselves in environments where that may happen. It's a little different from a hospital setting where you may absolutely have to give that blood for your benefit of your health. Here, we want it to be a good experience. We won't ever draw someone that it may end up with a complication or may end up in one of those reactions, because our goal is for everybody to come in and leave feeling that exciting gift of giving blood.
And Joy, I don't want to stretch things out too much, but especially when we're dealing with temperatures, and frankly, in some areas of the country right now, there's really bad weather. So this may be another case of climate change actually having an effect on our lives, is it not?
Well, and you know, the Red Cross responds to disasters, right? And right now we're very active in the southeast with Hurricane Debby. And when we do have hurricanes that go up the coast like that, or wildfires on the west coast, blood drives are canceled because we can't obviously have them. So that impacts the overall blood supply. So yeah, the climate crisis is real. Last year, there were $28 billion disasters. So we're constantly out there and we're constantly trying to balance responding and helping people and providing hope and comfort after disaster, but also collecting blood for our hospital partners. Every day, we have to collect across the country 12,500 units for 2,500 hospital partners, many of which are in the Chicagoland area. So what's going on across the country weather-wise is also important to the blood collection equation.
Emily, especially since you're on the front lines in this part of the business, when is usually the busy season or busy time of year when things are usually great? And I hesitate to ask, is this usually it?
So, Craig, you are spot on. I have been doing this for 15 years. And if you would have asked me that question 5 years ago, I would have told you June, July, August, and December are by far our hardest times of the year to collect. And that is still true. What we see happens in those seasons is that our high schools and colleges are on break. And as you can imagine, pre-COVID, high schools made up and colleges made up anywhere between 25 and 35% of our annual collections. And so when our students went on break, we had a bit of making up to do. So what was a 100 unit high school now has to be four smaller community drives or situations to kind of fill that impact. COVID has made it a very unique question to now ask, because we will have times where September or early October has been tricky months. And what we're finding is that some of our longtime partners who were big office buildings or big schools have gone into these remote situations. And so we've really had a relook at what the calendar looks like and what that ask is. And every month now we're bringing in new partners. We're bringing in new groups that want to host blood drives. As we're going into back to school season, one of my biggest asks for any listeners that are in the education environment is remember to keep us on your list. I know schools have a thousand things going on at this time of year, and the pressure is getting higher and higher, as we know, in education, but making sure that we're keeping this fun day and this life-saving opportunity to get our future donors in mind of that civic engagement and that community connection is so key to the future and not having so many of these blood shortages.
Joy, are there some types of you mentioned, you know, some slowing down on type O, which if I'm remembering correctly is the most common type, but are there some types of blood needed more across the country, and you know, how does that part of it work?
We need all types of blood donors to come out. We do. O is the most common, O positive, O negative, but all blood donors are needed. I don't want to discourage anyone of any blood type from coming out. And also, you don't even need to know your blood type. You'll find out after you donate. We have an app, and you'll get an email that'll tell you your blood type. It'll even tell you where your donation went to, what hospital partner, but all blood donation types are needed. All people are needed, all walks of life, all ages. We really need anybody who can donate to come out. It's estimated more than 60% of the population can donate, but yet only 3% do. And we need to move that number. We need to get more first-time donors out, for people to experience how they're helping others. People assume that there's a medication or a drug for just about everything, but there's no substitute for life-saving blood. It's the only way you can help someone who has that need in that medical moment is through your own personal donation.
Emily, are there myths or misconceptions that you have to overcome in order to encourage people to donate? I will admit at one point I thought, well, I used to have frequent colds and maybe that made me not a good. I mean, are there things that people need to understand about donations?
Yes. So interesting enough, with blood donation, it tends to be a generational item that we pass on from generation to generation. So as we look at our baby boomers specifically, are starting to get to be that older generation. And as they are deciding not to donate blood or starting to take a medication that may not allow them to donate blood, we aren't seeing enough of our younger donors coming in. And so I always like to tell people, because I've heard things from, oh, you have to be 21 to 18. People can start donating with parent consent at 16 in Illinois. So one of our biggest groups that we really try to get excited about blood donation is our 16 to 24 year olds, prior to all the commitments of family and kids. But that is one of the groups that we've seen the biggest change since I mentioned with COVID. So that's one area we really like to talk about, is that age. The second is medications. There are very few medications that actually defer you. I can say my parents both did this when I started working here. They're like, oh, we're on blood pressure medicine. I was like, great. That means your blood pressure is going to be perfect for actually donating blood. Or I've had people say, oh, I travel places. You don't like people that travel places. There's very few places that you actually travel that is a permanent deferral, if really any at this point. And then most of them are 3 months if they are. And the only reason we really run into places being a travel deferral is for malaria risk. So if you've had to read some information about malaria, that might be a place that you have to wait 3 months. But just about everywhere else, you're fine to donate right away. I have people who go on amazing European trips and then say, oh, I can't donate. And they absolutely can. One of the most exciting things I'll say happened in the last 5 years that is a myth now, but it was based in reason, was that people who were in Europe during the mad cow or Karl-Franz Jacobs disease era were deferred on a lifetime deferral for many, many years. We are so excited that the FDA has recently changed that. So our folks who were deferred are eligible to come back in now, and that won't be their deferral reason anymore. We'll double check all their other medications and all of their lifestyle questions they may have, but that one is no longer a deferral. We've also made huge, huge grounds with our LGBTQ plus community, and it not necessarily being about who you are having sexual activities with anymore, as what those in frequency and different partners. So this has really opened a whole new world for us that we're excited to get back with donors who may think they were never able to donate again, and now they're completely fine and welcome to come in and visit us.
And I should ask this, is there some kind of screening that the blood goes through? The fact that you can type it means, you know, obviously yes, but is that also another level that, and I know it's probably gotten more sophisticated as the technology has increased, but is that also something that makes it better for everyone?
We do. We are running 15 different tests on your blood every time you're donating it. We are checking for various diseases from HIV, but we're also doing things that are going to help you in your medical. So for all of our African-American or descent donors, if it's their first time donating, we actually run a sickle cell trait test. And we're finding out more information for our donors so that we can inform on things that are impacting their lives. The blood type. I always tell people, if you know your horoscope and your sign, but you don't know your blood type, one can save you and one can't. So we give a lot of great, useful information out.
Okay, I'm pleading guilty to that. I actually don't know my blood type. So I should probably donate just to find out. I do want to touch on something that you talked about right at the top, Joy, and that is so that people understand more about why this is vital. Because it's not just, I mean, people think of transfusions. Yes, yes, people need a lot of blood during transfusions, but I'm not sure people really understand how often and in how many different cases blood donations are needed, how much plasma or blood is needed.
You never really know when you're going to need blood or a member of your family is going to need blood. There are so many instances, cancer being a big one. About 30% of the blood supply does go to cancer patients. Any kinds of transplants or surgeries, various blood diseases like sickle cell, there's so many reasons. Birth trauma, that's a big one you don't think about, that really is another reason to need blood. There's so many reasons. And if we find that when someone has someone in their family who is impacted by any one of those things, and they see that blood go to that person and it breathes new life, then the family does typically come out and donate. We have so many instances of that because they realize, wow, we didn't know this was going to happen. And thank God blood was on the shelf, you know, that day. So to help, you know, my mother or my sister or my son. So really having it there when you need it is really important. And that's why we rely on the American public, on your listeners, to really get out and donate, even if it's the first time donating.
And Emily, I'm going to talk to you about your experience, not just in collecting blood, but otherwise. But you're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and we're talking about the national blood shortage and the American Red Cross. My guests are Joy Squire, Communications Director for the Illinois Red Cross, and Emily Alanis, the Illinois Red Cross District Manager for Donor Recruitment. And Emily, yes, you've been working to collect blood donations for 15 years, and I understand you found out firsthand how quickly one can become a recipient. Tell me about that.
I did. So with the birth of my second son, I joke that he apparently wanted to be talked about more at work, but he had a very exciting entrance into the world. And I went in for what should have been routine blood work, getting ready for his big arrival, and instead was given a quick wristband that said I wasn't allowed to leave the hospital because my blood had actually transformed because of my pregnancy, and I was no longer making platelets. So simple things and everyday operations like a C-section and childbirth suddenly became very risky. And I had to have a team of specialists come in, and they determined that I needed a transfusion to be able to give birth. And then after my son was born, the antibodies that were destroying those platelets in my body actually did it to his. And so 3 days into life, he received 2 blood transfusions and then a product called IVIG, which it takes about 1,000 blood donors to make that specialty product. So I say I have 1,003 people to thank for him entering this world. But it was a very shocking moment for me. I had been working in blood for 9 years and telling other people's stories. And so I will say, don't wait to have your own story. Nobody actually wants their own story. But it's important that those units are on the shelves, because no matter how many blood donors I knew that day, it was too late to call them to donate for him. I had to have that tested and ready to go blood that had been collected at least 3 days prior to save his life and my life in that moment.
And how soon into the experience did the irony alarm start going off in your head where you went, wow, this is what I do?
Well, my husband laughs because there we are in the emergency room and I'm asking for my cell phone. And he's like, I don't think you need to work right now. They'll handle it. And I said, no, I need to look at the inventory level because there had just been a huge snowstorm in Chicago. And I'm like, I need to make sure they have blood for my baby. So it really was that panic. And right, I'm a lucky mom. I get to actually look at the inventory and make sure it was there. But it was so eye-opening to know that complete strangers took care of me that day. And I will tell you, I now have a very rambunctious first grader getting ready to go to school. And I remind him all the time, he's already used his allotment of blood. He can't jump off the couch and do all those crazy things because we don't have enough O-neg for him right now.
Is he cool enough to get the humor in that?
He is. My husband always laughs. They go, you know, your mom's in blood banking when you get threatened with the inventory level of your blood type at work.
Well, but I mean, and how wonderful that the outcomes are good or have been so good for you and your family. This is probably a point to point out that helping blood drives isn't all that the Red Cross does by a long shot. The best known, I would say, services are involve disaster relief, and I would think that you mentioned it earlier. The organization has its hands busy, if not full, with Hurricane Debby. Tell me a little bit about about how the American Red Cross is rising to the challenge.
Well, the American Red Cross mission is helping to alleviate suffering in the face of emergency, and there's a lot of ways that plays out. Certainly, major storms like Debbie, when they come up the coast, we pre-position volunteers, shelters, food and supplies, and try to help people, you know, who can't stay in their homes and provide care and comfort for them and their families as a hurricane, a storm goes up the coast. And we are up and down the coast helping people right now. There are, you know, other hurricanes brewing. The water is very warm. And so we expect to see a lot of storms this year. There's also wildfires on the West Coast we're helping with. There were many, many tornadoes. So it's unpredictable, and it's become more and more so, the disaster work. But as an organization that's made up of 90% volunteers, we're there when people need us. And we have to plan. You can't plan for a disaster. You can prepare. You can respond. You can help people to recover. But you have to be there and be there when it's unpredictable.
And before we talk about some more of those areas, we don't want to leave Emily behind here, because I think, as we have been pointing out all along, almost all of the things that the Red Cross does, the possibility, the need for blood is right there hand in hand, isn't it?
It truly is. And so it's amazing to watch what our humanitarian services partners do, but impacting with biomed, we often have times where we are planning how to get a helicopter in to those areas that may have flooding or may have wildfires occurring, to make sure there's blood on the shelves and that we're able to restock what they're using for those emergency situations. So the size and the power of Red Cross and the amount of volunteers that we have, whether it's rolling up a sleeve or getting out into those disaster zones and making it possible to transport that blood through, is key. It all truly goes hand in hand. And I think what I love most about the Red Cross and about the blood drives is it gives us a chance to be a community. And I think more than ever, we need that in society, of these moments that we can all come together, no matter who you are, what your background is, we can make a difference as long as we're working together.
I think another time when we across the country come into contact with the Red Cross involves a couple of the other areas that Joy, you're involved with, and that's training. I think many of us who've had training in CPR have gotten it either at the Red Cross or from Red Cross personnel, and first aid. And how widespread is that part of the operation?
Really important part of the organization. There are so many stories of people's lives being saved because someone was trained in CPR and first aid and wasn't afraid to act in the moment. Every day in Red Cross buildings and in other buildings across the country, there are CPR and first aid classes going on. There are babysitting classes. There are classes to help the community, you know, be better community members. And we encourage your listeners to take one of those classes, go online to redcross.org and find a class near them. You never know when you need it. It's really something that we all should learn and be ready in a moment's notice.
Do you find it takes, or I shouldn't say that it takes convincing, but I would think that a lot of people are timid about coming to people's aid, not, you know, afraid to do something wrong. How do you overcome that?
I think having skills, you know, feeling the confidence when you are trained through a Red Cross CPR and first aid classes give you the ability to recognize what's going on in the situation and see what's needed. And, you know, you always call 911. That's the first step in any emergency situation. But in the meantime, seconds matter until the emergency responders can get there. And having that class gives you the confidence.
Mm. One of the other things that the Red Cross does is service to the armed forces. What is that?
Well, the Red Cross was founded by Clara Garton on the Civil War battlefield. She administered to soldiers who were in need more than 140 years ago. And today that mission carries forward. From when service members enlist all the way through veteran status, the Red Cross is there. For enlisted soldiers, we provide the emergency communication support should something go wrong at home, you know, should someone become ill or need a surgery or a death in the family. And we get to their commanding officers and let them know what's going on so that they can get home in the face of an emergency. There are many, many examples of people in the military telling us that the Red Cross got me home at a very important time. And then we also work through veteran status, helping veterans of different, all across the country at, you know, even places like Walter Reed and those, you know, Red Cross volunteers are everywhere. So we're there. It's an important part of our mission, helping those who serve.
And Emily, I want to talk to you a little bit about, again, because you're on the ground, what are, besides your own story, which is a remarkable one, what are the things that you remember from doing the job that you do, the times where we, whether it's in the collecting or hearing stories of other people that that stick with you and make you happy that you do what you do?
I would say each year we get opportunities to have special event drives, and those always take my breath away. When you have over 100 people who have decided to come together and do this, these massive drives to save lives. But outside of that, one of my favorites is anytime someone's just excited and says, you know what, I want to make a difference. How do I host a blood drive? Because with each donation, we can help a couple people. But when you are ready and willing to bring it to your area, that's the biggest thing we see that brings in first-time donors, is people love to help their friends and their family. And what a great way to go out in the community and say, I'm ready to be an ambassador for this. I want to give you the education. I want to give you the talking points to be able out and ask other people. I learned really fast I wasn't that popular and that I needed more friends to go out and help me spread this mission. And so every time somebody gets that smile and they get to see their first blood drive in motion, that's one of my favorite things, because you are literally saving lives and talking your friends and family into doing it alongside you.
And this is something that companies can do. A lot of the broadcasters in Chicago are members of a union, and our union had a blood drive. And so I think it's something that apparently this is pretty easy to do.
It is. So what we're looking for is people that were willing to bring 30 people together to host a blood drive. We work alongside you the entire way of giving you materials and talking points. I have a lot of people ask me, what does it cost? And there's truly no cost to hosting a blood drive. What we're looking for is you to open up space and to open up that word of mouth for us. The biggest thing we need help with is spreading the word and getting people to sign up and make an appointment at their drive.
And that is, well, you know what? Let me let Joy tell people, if they want to donate blood, what should they do?
Well, you can sign up to donate at redcrossblood.org. All you have to do is put in your zip code where you are. A whole host of drives will come up. Emily and her team have drives all over the Chicagoland area each and every day. And we encourage you to make an appointment. As I said, first-time donors are so important to us being able to maintain the blood supply and be there for hospital partners.
Thank you. And the need is right now. I want to thank Emily Alanis and Joy Squire from the Illinois Red Cross for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage, and you can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM. Blood donations are down in Illinois and across the nation, and that means blood supplies are tight and starting to dwindle. Why should you care? Well, you never know when you might need some of that supply. Don't believe me? Just ask my guests this weekend. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. We are are in the midst of an emergency blood shortage. The American Red Cross reports that blood donations are way down last month, and the humanitarian organization is sounding the alarm. Well, we're going to look past the headlines this weekend with two women who are right in the middle of this crisis and helping to point the way through. Joy Squire is Director of Communications for the Illinois Red Cross. She's also a national spokesperson for the American Red Cross. Emily Alanis is District Manager for Donor Recruitment, all important at a time like this. Well, we are conducting this interview via Zoom conferencing, and I thank both of you for joining me. Let's get started with you, Joy. Joy Squire, can you give us an overview of this nationwide crisis?
Well, the Red Cross collects 40% of the nation's blood supply. And that's an important number because last month we were down more than 19,000 units, and that means people just weren't able to come out and donate blood. And you never know when you're going to need that blood. Cancer patients, sickle cell patients, people having surgery, transplants, accident victims, you never know. Really only 3% of the U.S. population donates blood in a given year. And when those people slow down, we need more people to come out and join them, certainly. We experience an emergency blood shortage, which means we may have to slow the supply of blood to hospitals.
Now, has that had to happen in any parts of the country yet, or are we at least keeping up right now, if that's the word to use?
Keeping up is a good word. We did declare an emergency blood shortage because we put some stipulations on type O blood once we saw the 19,000 unit shortfall, but we've been heeding the call and trying to get the message out. So we appreciate you letting your listeners know about this emergency blood crisis.
Now, Emily Alanis, does Chicago seem to be or feel like it's ahead of or behind the curve?
So we have a lot of great things going for us in Chicago, and we are a location, especially being in the Midwest, where people show up, they answer these calls. Unfortunately, we still are outpacing the amount of blood we use in Chicagoland compared to what we're bringing in. And so that's where you see that 19,000. We're not as far behind as some of our other regions, but we definitely have work to do. And unfortunately, one thing we're seeing here in Chicago is the temperatures are going up. And just in July alone, we had 10 drives impacted where we either needed to cancel the drive day of because we couldn't control the temperature in our space, or we had to close early because it became unsafe to donate blood. So we have lots of unique things going on that while we have a strong donor base, we have a great support system, we've had some odd impacts over the last couple of months that are getting us to this place.
And can you explain why temperature would be so, but it's not just a matter of people coming out of their houses. What else does temperature do when you are collecting blood?
Yeah, so temperature is very important because as we are considered a medical environment, we do have to be able to control that temperature. We like to keep our temperature between 68 and 82 degrees. We find that that has the best outcome for individuals feeling good, being excited when they leave. And unfortunately, if it gets above that 82 degree marker, we start to see things like reactions. And if somebody has a bad reaction once, it's very likely we won't have them come in and donate again. So we're very careful to not get ourselves in environments where that may happen. It's a little different from a hospital setting where you may absolutely have to give that blood for your benefit of your health. Here, we want it to be a good experience. We won't ever draw someone that it may end up with a complication or may end up in one of those reactions, because our goal is for everybody to come in and leave feeling that exciting gift of giving blood.
And Joy, don't want to stretch things out too much, but especially when we're dealing with temperatures, and frankly, in some areas of the country right now, there's really bad weather. So this may be another case of climate change actually having an effect on our lives, is it not?
Well, as you know, the Red Cross responds to disasters, right? And right now we're very active in the Southeast with Hurricane Debbie. And when we do have hurricanes that go up the coast like that, or wildfires on the West Coast, blood drives are canceled because we can't obviously have them. So that impacts the overall blood supply. So yeah, the climate crisis is real. Last year, there were $28 billion disasters. So we're constantly out there and we're constantly trying to balance responding and helping people and providing hope and comfort after disaster, but also collecting blood for our hospital partners. Every day, we have to collect across the country 12,500 units for 2,500 hospital partners, many of which are in the Chicagoland area. So what's going on across the country weather-wise is also important to the blood collection equation.
Emily, especially since you're on the front lines in this part of the business, when is usually the busy season or busy time of year when things are usually great? And I hesitate to ask, is this usually it?
So, Craig, you are spot on. I have been doing this for 15 years. And if you would have asked me that question 5 years ago, I would have told you June, July, August, and December are by far our hardest times of the year to collect. And that is still true. What we see happens in those seasons is that our high schools and colleges are on break. And as you can imagine, pre-COVID, high schools made up and colleges made up anywhere between 25 and 35% of our annual collections. And so when our students went on break, we had a bit of making up to do. So what was a 100 unit high school now has to be four smaller community drives or situations to kind of fill that impact. COVID has made it a very unique question to now ask, because we will have times where September or early October has been tricky months. And what we're finding is that some of our longtime partners who were big office buildings or big schools have gone into these remote situations. And so we've really had a relook at what the calendar looks like and what that ask is. And every month now we're bringing in new partners. We're bringing in a new group that want to host blood drives. As we're going into back to school season, one of my biggest asks for any listeners that are in the education environment is remember to keep us on your list. I know schools have 1,000 things going on at this time of year, and the pressure is getting higher and higher, as we know, in education, but making sure that we're keeping this fun day and this life-saving opportunity to get our future donors in mind of that civic engagement and that community connection is so key to the future and not having so many of these blood shortages.
Joy, are there some types of you mentioned, you know, some slowing down on type O, which if I'm remembering correctly is the most common type, but are there some types of blood needed more across the country, and you know, how does that part of it work?
All types of blood donors to come out. We do. O is the most common, O positive, O negative, but all blood donors are needed. I don't want to discourage anyone of any blood type from coming out. And also, you don't even need to know your blood type. You'll find out after you donate. We have an app, and you'll get an email that'll tell you your blood type. It'll even tell you where your donation went to, what hospital partner, but all blood donation types are needed. All people are needed, all walks of life, all ages. We really need anybody who can donate to come out. It's estimated more than 60% of the population can donate, but yet only 3% do. And we need to move that number. We need to get more first-time donors out, for people to experience how they're helping others. People assume that there's a medication or a drug for just about everything, but there's no substitute for life-saving blood. It's the only way you can help someone who has that need in that medical moment is through your own personal donation.
Emily, are there myths or misconceptions that you have to overcome in order to encourage people to donate? You know, I will admit at one point I thought, well, I used to have frequent colds and maybe that made me not a good, I mean, are there things that people need to understand about donations?
Yes. So interesting enough, with blood donation, it tends to be a generational item that we pass on from generation to generation. So as we look at our baby boomers specifically are starting to get to be that older generation, and as they are deciding not to donate blood or starting to take a medication that may not allow them to donate blood, we aren't seeing enough of our younger donors coming in. And so I always like to tell people, because I've heard things from, oh, you have to be 21 to 18. People can start donating with parent consent at 16 in Illinois. So one of our biggest groups that we really try to get excited about blood donation is our 16 to 24 year olds, prior to all the commitments of family and kids. But that is one of the groups that we've seen the biggest change since I mentioned with COVID. So that's one area we really like to talk about, is that age. The second is medications. There are very few medications that actually defer you. I can say my parents both did this when I started working here. They're like, oh, we're on blood pressure medicine. I was like, great. That means your blood pressure is going to be perfect for actually donating blood. Or I've had people say, oh, I travel places. You don't like people that travel places. There's very few places that you actually travel that is a permanent deferral, if really any at this point. And then most of them are 3 months if they are. And the only reason we really run into places being a travel deferral is for malaria risk. So if you've had to read some information about malaria, that might be a place that you have to wait 3 months. But just about everywhere else, you're fine to donate right away. I have people who go on amazing European trips and then say, oh, I can't donate. And they absolutely can. One of the most exciting things I'll say happened in the last 5 years that is a myth now, but it was based in reason, was that people who were in Europe during the mad cow or Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease era were deferred on a lifetime deferral for many, many years. We are so excited that the FDA has recently changed that. So our folks who were deferred are eligible to come back in now, and that won't be their deferral reason anymore. We'll double check all their other medications and all of their lifestyle questions they may have, but that one is no longer a deferral. We've also made huge, huge grounds with our LGBTQ plus community, and it not necessarily being about who you are having sexual activities with anymore, as what those in frequency and different partners. So this has really opened a whole new world for us that we're excited to get back with donors who may think they were never able to donate again, and now they're completely fine and welcome to come in and visit us.
And I should ask this, is there some kind of screening that the blood goes through? The fact that you can type it means, you know, obviously yes, but is that also another level that, and I know it's probably gotten more sophisticated as the technology has increased, but is that also something that makes it better for everyone?
We do. We are running 15 different tests on your blood every time you're donating it. We are checking for various diseases from HIV, but we're also doing things that are going to help you in your medical. So for all of our African-American or descent donors, if it's their first time donating, we actually run a sickle cell trait test. And we're finding out more information for our donors so that we can inform on things that are impacting their lives. The blood type. I always tell people, if you know your horoscope and your sign, but you don't know your blood type, one can save you and one can't. So we give a lot of great useful information out.
Okay, I'm pleading guilty to that. I actually don't know my blood type, so I should probably donate just to find out. But I do want to touch on something that you talked about right at the top, Joy, and that is so that people understand more about why this is vital. Because it's not just, I mean, people think of transfusions. Yes, people need a lot of blood during transfusions, but I'm not sure people really understand how often and in how many different cases blood donations are needed, how much plasma or blood is needed.
You never really know when you're going to need blood or a member of your family's going to need blood. There are so many instances, cancer being a big one. About 30% of the blood supply does go to cancer patients. Any kinds of transplants or surgeries, various blood diseases like sickle cell, there's so many reasons. Birth trauma, that's a big one you don't think about, that really is another reason to need blood. There's so many reasons. And if we find that when someone has someone in their family who is impacted by any one of those things, and they see that blood go to that person and it breathes new life, then the family does typically come out and donate. We have so many instances of that because they realize, wow, we didn't know this was going to happen. And thank God blood was on the shelf, you know, that day. So to help, you know, my mother or my sister or my son. So really having it there when you need it is really important. And that's why we rely on the American public, on your listeners, to really get out and donate, even if it's the first time donating.
And Emily, I'm going to talk to you about your experience, not just in collecting blood, but otherwise. But you're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore, and we're talking about the national blood shortage and the American Red Cross. My guests are Joy Squire, Communications Director for the Illinois Red Cross, and Emily Alanis, the Illinois Red Cross District Manager for Donor Recruitment. And Emily, yes, you've been working to collect blood donations for 15 years, and I understand you found out firsthand how quickly one can become a recipient. Tell me about
that. So with the birth of my second son, I joke that he apparently wanted to be talked about more at work, but he had a very exciting entrance into the world. And I went in for what should have been routine blood work, getting ready for his big arrival, and instead was given a quick wristband that said I wasn't allowed to leave the hospital because my blood had actually transformed because of my pregnancy, and I was no longer making platelets. So simple things and everyday operations like a C-section and childbirth suddenly became very risky, and I had to have a team of specialists come in, and they determined that I needed a transfusion to be able to give birth. And then after my son was born, the antibodies that were destroying those platelets in my body actually did it to his. And so 3 days into life, he received 2 blood transfusions and then a product called IVIG, which it takes about 1,000 blood donors to make that specialty product. So I say I have 1,003 people to thank for him entering this world. But it was a very shocking moment for me. I had been working in blood for 9 years and telling other people's stories. And so I will say, don't wait to have your own story. Nobody actually wants their own story. But it's important that those units are on the shelves, because no matter how many blood donors I knew that day, it was too late to call them to donate for him. I had to have that tested and ready to go blood that had been collected at least 3 days prior to save his life and my life in that moment.
And how soon into the experience did the irony alarm start going off in your head where you went, wow, this is what I do?
Well, my husband laughs because there we are in the emergency room and I'm asking for my cell phone. And he's like, I don't think you need to work right now. They'll handle it. And I said, no, I need to look at the inventory level because there had just been a huge snowstorm in Chicago. And I'm like, I need to make sure they have blood for my baby. So it really was that panic. And right, I'm a lucky mom. I get to actually look at the inventory and make sure it was there. But it was so eye-opening to know that complete strangers took care of me that day. And I will tell you, I now have a very rambunctious first grader getting ready to go to school. And I remind him all the time, he's already used his allotment of blood. He can't jump off the couch and do all those crazy things because we don't have enough O-neg for him right now.
Is he cool enough to get the humor in that?
He is. My husband always laughs. They go, you know, your mom's in blood banking when you get threatened with the inventory level of your blood type at work.
Well, but I mean, and how wonderful that the outcomes are good, or have been so good for you and your family. This is probably a point to point out that helping blood drives isn't all that the Red Cross does by a long shot. The best known, I would say, services are involve disaster relief, and I would think that you mentioned it earlier. The organization has its hands busy, if not full, with Hurricane Debbie. Tell me a little bit about how the American Red Cross is rising to the challenge.
Well, the American Red Cross mission is helping to alleviate suffering in the face of emergency, and there's a lot of ways that plays out. Certainly, major storms like Debbie, when they come up the coast, we pre-position volunteers, shelters, food and supplies, and try to help people, you know, who can't stay in their homes and provide care and comfort for them and their families as a hurricane, a storm goes up the coast. And we are up and down the coast helping people right now. There are, you know, other hurricanes brewing. The water is very warm, and so we expect to see a lot of storms this year. There's also wildfires on the West Coast we're helping with. There were many, many tornadoes. So it's unpredictable, and it's become more and more so, the disaster work. But as an organization that's made up of 90% volunteers, we're there when people need us, and we have to plan. You can't plan for a disaster. You can prepare, you can respond, you can help people to recover, but you have to be there and be there when it's unpredictable.
And before we talk about some more of those areas, we don't want to leave Emily behind here, because I think, as we have been pointing out all along, almost all of the things that the Red Cross does, the possibility, the need for blood is right there hand in hand, isn't it?
It truly is. And so it's amazing to watch what our humanitarian services partners do, but impacting with biomed, we often have times where we are planning how to get a helicopter in to those areas that may have flooding or may have wildfires occurring, to make sure there's blood on the shelves and that we're able to restock what they're using for those emergency situations. So the size and the power of Red Cross and the amount of volunteers that we have, whether it's rolling up a sleeve or getting out into those disaster zones and making it possible to transport that blood through, is key. It all truly goes hand in hand. And I think what I love most about the Red Cross and about the blood drives is it gives us a chance to be a community. And I think more than ever, we need that in society, of these moments that we can all come together, no matter who you are, what your background is, we can make a difference as long as we're working together.
I think another time when we across the country come into contact with the Red Cross involves a couple of the other areas that Joy, you're involved with, and that's training. I think almost if not all of us, many of us who've had training in CPR have gotten it either at the Red Cross or from Red Cross personnel, and first aid. And how widespread is that part of the operation?
Really important part of the organization. There are so many stories of people's lives being saved because someone was trained in CPR and first aid and wasn't afraid to act in the moment. Every day in Red Cross buildings and in other buildings across the country, there are CPR and first aid classes going on. There are babysitting classes. There are classes to help the community, you know, be better community members. And we encourage your listeners to take one of those classes, go online to redcross.org and find a class near them. You never know when you need it. It's really something that we all should learn and be ready in a moment's notice.
Do you find it takes, or I shouldn't say that it takes convincing, but I would think that a lot of people are timid about coming to people's aid, not, you know, afraid to do something wrong. How do you overcome that?
I think having skills, you know, feeling the confidence when you are trained through a Red Cross CPR and first aid classes give you the ability to recognize what's going on in the situation and see what's needed. And, you know, you always call 911. That's the first step in any emergency situation. But in the meantime, seconds matter until the emergency responders can get there. And having that class gives you the confidence.
Mm. One of the other things that the Red Cross does is service to the armed forces. What is that?
Well, the Red Cross was founded by Clara Barton on the Civil War battlefield. She administered to soldiers who were in need more than 140 years ago. And today, that mission carries forward. From when service members enlist all the way through veteran status, the Red Cross is there. For enlisted soldiers, we provide the emergency communication support should something go wrong at home, you know, should someone become ill or need a surgery or a death in the family. And we get to their commanding officers and let them know what's going on so that they can get home in the face of an emergency. There are many, many examples of people in the military telling us that the Red Cross got me home at a very important time. And then we also work through Veteran Santa's helping veterans of different, all across the country, and, you know, even places like Walter Reed and those, you know, Red Cross volunteers are everywhere. So we're there. It's an important part of our mission, helping those who serve.
And Emily, I want to talk to you a little bit about, again, because you're on the ground, what are, besides your own story, which is a remarkable one, what are the things that you remember from doing the job that you do, the times where we, whether it's in the collecting or hearing stories of other people that that stick with you and make you happy that you do what you do?
I would say each year we get opportunities to have special event drives, and those always take my breath away. When you have over 100 people who have decided to come together and do this, these massive drives to save lives. But outside of that, one of my favorites is anytime someone's just excited and says, you know what, I want to make a difference. How do I host a blood drive? Because with each donation, we can help a couple people. But when you are ready and willing to bring it to your area, that's the biggest thing we see that brings in first-time donors, is people love to help their friends and their family. And what a great way to go out in the community and say, I'm ready to be an ambassador for this. I want to give you the education. I want to give you the talking points to be able out and ask other people. I learned really fast I wasn't that popular, that I needed more friends to go out and help me spread this mission. And so every time somebody gets that smile and they get to see their first blood drive in motion, that's one of my favorite things, because you are literally saving lives and talking your friends and family into doing it alongside you.
And this is something that companies can do. A lot of the broadcasters in Chicago are members of a union, and our union had a blood drive. And was so I think it's something that apparently this is pretty easy to do.
It is. So what we're looking for is people that were willing to bring 30 people together to host a blood drive. We work alongside you the entire way of giving you materials and talking points. I have a lot of people ask me, what does it cost? And there's truly no cost to hosting a blood drive. What we're looking for is you to open up space and to open up that word of mouth for us. The biggest thing we need help with is spreading the word and getting people to sign up and make an appointment at their drive.
And that is, well, you know what? Let me let Joy tell people, if they want to donate blood, what should they do?
Well, you can sign up to donate at redcrossblood.org. All you have to do is put in your zip code where you are. A whole host of drives will come up. Emily and her team have drives all over the Chicagoland area each and every day. And we encourage you to make an appointment. As I said, first-time donors are so important to us being able to maintain the blood supply and be there for hospital partners.
Thank you. And the need is right now. I want to thank Emily Alanis and Joy Squire from the Illinois Red Cross for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you would like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com. There's a link on the homepage, and you can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.